Chapter 4.
And you don't have a clue what it was? Brocklaw asked.
I shook my head. In the 3 or 4 hours since we'd returned from the depths of the mine, I'd been asked that question often.
None. But you wouldn't want one as a house pet, believe me.
A few of those present in the command centre chuckled dutifully. Besides myself and the Major, Castine was the only other person seated on what I couldn't help thinking of as the military side of the conference table. Facing us was Morrell, whose interest in the situation was undeniable and whose reaction had fallen somewhere between shock at the news that his worst fears were founded and grim satisfaction that his forebodings had been vindicated. Alongside him sat representatives from the Administratum and the Adeptus Mechanicus. Around us, the rest of our senior officers continued to monitor troop positions and intelligence reports, ignoring the little knot of civilians in our midst as best they could as they bustled in and out with data slates and mugs of Tanner. Remembering Quintus's advice, I'd requested that he and Logash be our liaisons with their respective orders and was pleased that this decision had proven to be wise. The young scrivener was as affable as I remembered, and Logash had turned out to have a quick wit and a courteous manner at marked odds with the defensiveness of his superior. To Castine's evident relief, he had few visible marks of augmentation as well, beyond a pair of faceted metal eyes which caught the light as his head moved, and although the Emperor alone knew what his robes concealed, she was able to keep her revulsion in check. When I asked her why she found the tech priests so disturbing, she just shrugged and said, "They're weird, that's all." She never reacted that way towards me or anyone else in the regiment with augmetic replacements, so I guess it was just the sense she got from them of having voluntarily, if not eagerly, surrendered part of their humanity.
1. A common reaction to members of the Adeptus Mechanicus. Personally, it's their air of smugness I find most off-putting. And isn't it about time the Ordo Hereticus started asking some pointed questions about this Omnisire cult of theirs?
I've taken a look through the Codex Ferrae, Logash volunteered. Based on the Commissar's description of the beast, I'm pretty sure whatever it isn't native to Simia Orichalcae.
Then how the hell did it get here? Morrell asked.
Logash shrugged. Maybe the orcs brought it with them.
That's highly unlikely, Castine said, taking a little too much satisfaction in contradicting the tech priest. But he took it in his stride and gave way to her greater expertise.
You'd be a better judge of that than me, he shrugged again. Maybe it's stowed away on one of the tanker shuttles, then.
Quintus nodded in agreement.
They're certainly big enough for something to hide in undetected. I remember a couple of years back, a few of the miners thought it would be funny to smuggle in some...
Who cares how it got here? Morrell broke in. The question is, what are we going to do about it?
Go back down there and kill it, I said. Morrell nodded with grim satisfaction, but Quintus's eyes narrowed a little.
I don't want to sound as though I'm doubting your sense of priorities, but surely the orcs are the real threat. Can't this thing wait until you've seen them off?
It's not the creature we're worried about, Castine said. It's the unmarked tunnels the Commissar found down there.
Probably burrowed by the beast, Logash said. He pulled a data slate from the recesses of his robes and started scribbling notes with a lux pen embedded in the tip of a finger. That might account for the size of the claws the Commissar saw.
It doesn't matter who dug them, I pointed out. What matters is that they're a potential hole in our defences. As if to underline my words, a bright flash cut through the flurrying snow outside the window, followed almost at once by the concussive thud of explosive detonation. The orcs had obligingly arrived on schedule and were busily throwing themselves, or more probably their Gretchen cannon fodder, against our outer defensive line with a gratifying lack of success so far. Luckily, Mazarin and her acolytes had managed to get the damaged shuttle flying again in a matter of hours, and the rest of our deployment had gone without a hitch, so we'd been more than ready to meet them despite my fears.
I take your point, Quintus said. What do you suggest?
I'm going back down there, I said, with a squad of troopers. We'll map the tunnels as we go and kill the creature when we find it.
You're leading the group personally? Logash asked. I nodded.
Commissar Kane is by far the best man for the job, Castine explained. He has more experience of tunnel fighting than anyone else in the regiment. Not from choice, I might add, but if it kept me out of the cold and away from the orcs, I wasn't about to object.
I'd like to come too, if I may, Logash said.
I think I'm hardly exaggerating when I say the rest of us simply stared at him in blank astonishment. Xenology is a bit of a hobby of mine. I might be able to identify what we're looking for. This is a search-and-destroy mission, not a stroll around the zoo, Castine said irritably. Logash looked a little crestfallen. I thought she was being unnecessarily hard on the boy. At least he was trying to help, which was more than his superiors were willing to do. And it didn't seem too good an idea to squash that enthusiasm. Besides, I had no objection to presenting the beast with another potential meal to stand between me and it. Of course, if I'd known just how much trouble he was going to turn out to be, I'd have left him behind, or even shot him on the spot. But regrets are a waste of good drinking time, as my old friend Devis used to say. It would be at your own risk, I told him. And you'd be under military authority. That means you do what you're told at all times. All right? Fine, he nodded eagerly. Do I get a gun? Absolutely not, Castine and I said simultaneously. After seeing the civilians out, Castine, Brocklaw and I returned to the business of fighting the war. Our strategy seemed to be working, at least for now, keeping the main line of the Orc advance bottled up in the neck of the valley quite nicely. The peculiar nature of an ice world, and the Valhallans' understanding of how to exploit it, were paying handsome dividends, as the latest sensor downloads from the Pure of Heart were making abundantly clear. I gazed at the blurry image in the tactical hololith. It looked like someone had dropped it on the journey up here from the landing pad, as the three-dimensional representation of the battlefield would occasionally jump a few centimetres to the left, blank out, and reset itself. I reflected ruefully that perhaps we shouldn't have been quite so eager to get rid of Logash, who had practically skipped out of there, eager to be off and prattling about various unpleasant life forms our intruder probably wasn't. Never a tech priest around when you need one, Brocklaw murmured, obviously thinking the same thing. He cast a sidelong glance at the colonel, who pretended not to have heard. Thanks to the frozen landscape, we'd been able to fortify in depth with an ease which would have been impossible practically anywhere else. I was looking, when the blasted hololith would let me, at an extensive network of trenches and firing pits which would have taken weeks to dig in more normal terrain, but which had been hollowed out in mere hours by adroit use of our heavy flamers and multi-lasers. Of course, half the troops manning them would have frozen to death by now if they'd been anyone else, but these were Valhallans, and the bone-chilling temperatures outside were just like a holiday resort so far as they were concerned. I'd even had to break up a couple of snowball fights before the orcs turned up to spoil the party.
1. From which we can infer that, despite his reluctance to step outside, Kane had visited the front line at least once by this point, probably after his return to the surface.
So far, so good, I said, quietly satisfied with the conduct of our troopers. The line was holding nicely, and the view from orbit showed that the Orc advance had pretty much ground to a halt in the face of this unexpected resistance. So far as I could tell, the topography of the valley was working to our advantage, as well as we'd hoped, with the broad front of the Orc advance funneling into the mouth of it and running right into our killing zone. Of course, being Orcs, this didn't diminish their enthusiasm. Quite the reverse. Some flashes of gunfire on the outer fringes of the mob indicated that fratricidal firefights had broken out as the groups farthest from the fighting had run out of patience and had started blasting their way through their own comrades to get to us. Well, that was fine with me. The more of them who killed each other, the better I liked it. But there were still plenty left where they'd come from. What's that? Brocklaw asked, pointing at a blip some way behind the bulk of the Orc army. Whatever it was massive, and moving slowly but inexorably towards us. A heavy sense of foreboding sank into my stomach as I stared at it. I had a horrible suspicion as to what it might be, but prayed fervently to the Emperor that I was wrong. Not that I thought for a moment that he might actually be listening, but you never know. And it relieved the stress. According to this, it's huge, Castine said, a hint of confusion in her voice. Rather than verbalise my fears, which would somehow make them more concrete, I voxed Mazarin aboard the orbiting starship to request a more detailed analysis. That way I could continue to cling to the hope that I might be wrong for a few more precious minutes. Single contact, about 200 kilometres to the west, I said. Can you give us a little more detail?
If the Omnisire wills it, the tech priest said cheerfully, and busied herself for a few moments with the appropriate rituals.
After a short pause, her voice returned with a slightly harder edge to it.
It's a single artifact, approximately 80 meters in height, self-propelled with a high thermal signature which indicates combustion processes of some kind. Metallic shell, mainly ferric in composition. Her voice faltered. I'm sorry, Commissar. I don't have a clue what it is. I can meditate on it, but there's no need, thank you, I said. You've just confirmed what I suspected. It's a gargant. Castine and Brocklaw stared at one another in horror. The orcish equivalent of a battle titan. The approaching construct might be crude, but it would certainly have enough firepower aboard to punch through our defensive lines without even so much as slowing down. Any suggestions you might have about vulnerabilities we can exploit would be gratefully received. I'll analyze the data and see what I can find, she promised. We can't ask for more, I said, and turned back to the other officers. We studied the hololith together, brows furrowed. I reckon we've got less than a day before it gets here, I began. Then Mazarin's voice interrupted me again. Sorry to break in, Commissar, but the captain would like a word. This isn't exactly a good time, I said, then changed my mind. If things went horribly wrong, which they looked very like doing at the moment, the Pure of Heart was my best chance of getting out of the system with my hide intact. An annoying Durant would be a seriously bad idea. No, put him on. Why's my ship crawling with groundlings? The captain asked, his voice tinged with an asperity which didn't seem entirely affected. I've just got rid of your troopers and now you're shuttling up half the population of this miserable ice ball. We're sending up rather more than half, I said, trying to sound reasonable. I thought the administratum here had cleared it with you. You mean Prike? A phlegmy sound of disgust rattled the speakers of the Vox unit. Impossible woman. Doesn't listen to a word you say. How in the Emperor's name did you manage to get her to cooperate with you? It was surprisingly easy after the Commissar threatened to shoot her, Castine said with a hint of a smile. Durant seemed speechless for a moment. Ugh! Worth a try, I suppose. A faint tinge of amusement entered his tone. But that still doesn't answer my question. We're evacuating as many of the civilians as we can, Brocklaw explained. Especially the workers' families. They'll be a lot safer with you than they are down here. And we can fight more effectively if we're sure they won't be getting underfoot, Castine added, a little more candidly. Under your feet, you mean? The captain sounded mollified. I suppose we can stick them in a couple of the cargo holds now they're not cluttered up with your military junk. That would be appreciated, I said. No problem. I'm sure the administratum can afford their fares. He broke the connection abruptly. Of course, there was another unspoken reason for evacuating the workers from the plant, although none of us wanted to think about it. If we were unable to hold the place, and I was a lot less sanguine about that now than I had been 20 minutes ago, the orcs would want to make use of it. No point in leaving them a pool of highly skilled slave labour, which would maintain promethium output at the current high levels. Their own mechs would figure out the process eventually, of course, but they wouldn't be nearly so efficient. And with any luck, we'd have had time to launch a counterattack or call the Astartes in to sterilise the place before they got the plant up and running again. I stared at the hololith and the almost imperceptibly moving blip of the gargant. We had nothing in our inventory capable of fighting something like that. No tanks, no artillery, and most especially no titans of our own. Brocklaw noticed the direction of my gaze. Cheer up, he said. We'll think of something. Better make it quick. Castine said.